This morning, America's First News starts right after this.
When shopping for car insurance, consider this. GEICO has been saving people money on car insurance for over 75 years. So if you're serious about savings, it's simple. Go to geico.com. After 75 years, they know how to save you money.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This morning with your host, Gordon Deal.
Another church scandal. Good morning, I'm Gordon Deal, along with Jennifer Koschenka. It is Thursday, June 29. Thanks for joining us. Here's what we have for you this hour.
Authorities in Australia have charged a senior official at the Vatican with sexual abuse from decades ago. Cardinal George Pell denies the allegations.
Watch for guidelines today from the Trump administration regarding the travel ban. Reports say being a fiancé is not a bona fide family connection.
Senate Republicans spent the day trying to iron out differences over proposed health insurance regulation.
And four ways you're losing money at work.
We know that everyone is looking to maximize their paycheck these days, but there are a couple of little mistakes you might be making here and there that really can add up to not getting the full benefit of everything you're entitled to at work.
Kelly Grant at CNBC.com says one of them, not recalculating your worth. She's here in about 20 minutes. One of the most senior officials in the Vatican has been charged with multiple counts of sexual abuse alleged to have occurred in Australia decades ago. 76-year-old George Pell, the finance chief for Pope Francis, is the highest-level Vatican official to face charges in the sexual abuse scandals that have rocked the Catholic Church. He denied the allegations earlier today.
News of these charges strengthens my resolve. And court proceedings now offer me an opportunity to clear my name.
More now from Wall Street Journal senior correspondent Rob Stewart, who's based in Australia. Rob, give us the basics.
Well, the Australian police this morning have laid multiple counts of sexual abuse charges against Cardinal Pell. This relates to allegations that occurred in Australia decades ago. He is, of course, the highest level Vatican official to face charges in any sexual abuse scandal that has rocked the Catholic Church. So this is quite a momentous charges that have been laid.
All right. So we know that this happened years ago, but we don't know exactly what happened or how many complaints were filed.
No, we do know that it involves multiple complainants, but the details weren't disclosed by the police. And there's a lot of legal matters around that.
Mm. All right. So explain kind of his rise to prominence. Can you give us a little history?
Yeah, he has over the years risen up very high in the Catholic Church. He began, obviously, in Australia. He was born just northwest of the city of Melbourne, and he was ordained. He's obviously in his 70s now, so this is going back a long way. He rose up to through the ranks, held a number of positions in parishes around the Melbourne area. Then became Archbishop of Melbourne in 1996, after which he was then appointed as Archbishop of Sydney. Most recently, though, he was brought over to the Vatican to be the finance chief for the Pope. So he is one of the highest-ranking officials within the Vatican.
Mm. All right, so in the story, it is said that he must appear in an Australian court middle of July, and there's no extradition agreement with the Vatican?
Yeah. That's correct. So he is voluntarily deciding to come back to Australia because of the lack of an extradition treaty. It is voluntary. But he has been required to appear at the Melbourne Magistrates Court on July 18th to face the charges officially.
Mm.
So that's the next big step we'll see here.
We're speaking with Rob Stewart, Wall Street Journal senior correspondent, talking about Cardinal George Pell, senior Vatican official charged with multiple counts of sexual abuse that allegedly occurred in Australia years ago. He's the finance chief for Pope Francis. You point out in the story, too, that this is kind of not his first brush with controversy. What happened in 93? He supported in court a convicted pedophile? What was that about?
So he has been something of a very prominent figure, but also there has been some controversy around him over the years while he was in Australia. There's a number of reasons for that. He had very orthodox, shall we say, positions on social issues. He, in 2007, threatened to refuse communion to Australian lawmakers who voted in support of bills allowing stem cell research. But it was in 1993, when he was auxiliary bishop for Melbourne, that he appeared in a court hearing in support of a convicted pedophile priest. And as Archbishop of Melbourne in 1996, he did oversee the church's response to child sexual abuse allegations. Mm. And he masterminded a program then that capped compensation for the victim.
Thanks, Rob. Rob Stewart, Wall Street Journal senior correspondent, with us today from Australia. In Washington, Senate Republican leaders are trying to piece together a replacement for Obamacare and are hoping to do so by the end of tomorrow, but are still debating key provisions. A day after Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell postponed a vote on the bill until after next week's July 4 recess, GOP senators yesterday were in and out of Mr. McConnell's office. More than a dozen of them also met for a closed-door luncheon to air their ideas. South Dakota Senator John Thune.
Now it's a function of going back to the drawing board, hitting the pause button for just a minute, but we will get there. We have members who are committed to getting to yes, and they realize the stakes of not getting to yes. Failure is not an option.
Conservatives have been pushing an idea backed by Texas Senator Ted Cruz that would allow insurance companies who offer at least one plan that meets ACA requirements to also offer a cheaper plan covering fewer benefits. Supporters say people who don't need a specific benefit shouldn't have to buy it. For example, men should not be required to buy policies that include maternity services. 12 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Thanks for being with us. Reminder, by the way, that we can connect on social media. You can friend us on Facebook or follow us on Twitter with the username at This Morning Show. You can follow me directly on Twitter, too, with the username at Gordon Deal. The Trump administration plans to begin enforcing its travel ban today, but don't expect the changes to be noticeable immediately. Here's more now from This Morning's Mike Gavin.
The Department of Homeland Security is preparing to issue guidance for who will qualify for visas. The Wall Street Journal says a version of the guidelines under discussion yesterday called for a restricted definition of what family ties would qualify as a bona fide relationship that allowed for U.S. travel. Under this version, applicants reportedly would need to prove a relationship to a parent, spouse, child, adult son or daughter-in-law, or sibling in the U.S. Others, including grandparents, grandchildren, and fiancés, would not qualify. Gordon.
Thanks, Mike. Beyond the new travel rules, the Journal says Homeland Security is also developing new rules for vetting visa and refugee applicants and is still conducting a country-by-country review of security procedures that could lead to new and possibly more sweeping travel restrictions by people from the six targeted countries and elsewhere. The Department of Homeland Security is also calling for new airline security measures, including increased screening for flights into the U.S. from around the world. The measures are designed for domestic and foreign carriers coming into the U.S. from all 280 ports of departure across 105 countries. Homeland Security Secretary John Kelly says the changes will be seen and unseen and will include increased explosive screening as well as a beefed-up security posture across the board.
Terrorists want to bring down aircraft to instill fear, disrupt our economies, and undermine our way of life. And it works, which is why they still see aviation as the crown jewel target in their world.
The department will need cooperation from airlines since it does not have jurisdiction over airports in foreign countries. DHS officials said that if the measures are not fully implemented, they could potentially pursue additional steps, and this could include banning electronic devices larger than a phone, the so-called laptop ban, which was being discussed and already is in place at 10 airports overseas. It's 20 minutes after the hour on This Morning. Jennifer Koschenka is here with more of America's First News.
Gordon, Cardinal George Pell, one of Pope Francis's top advisors, has taken a leave of absence as the Vatican's financial czar to face multiple criminal charges in his native Australia that allege he committed sexual assault years ago. Pell appeared before reporters in the Vatican press office today to forcefully deny the accusations.
I'm innocent of these charges. They are false. The whole idea of sexual abuse is abhorrent to me.
Pell, the Vatican's financial controller since 2014, is the highest-ranking church official to be charged with sexual abuse. Senate Republican leaders are aiming to have a revised health care bill crafted by tomorrow so that it can be scored over the July 4th recess. But the lack of consensus is making achieving that goal challenging. President Trump remains confident that it can be done.
I think we're going to get at least very close, and I think we're going to get it over the line. There was a great, great feeling in that room yesterday.
But Senator Susan Collins, who's opposed to the current version, says it's going to be very difficult to reach a health care deal in the next 2 days. The Senate Intelligence Committee has an agreement to get former FBI Director James Comey's memos of his conversations with President Trump. The panel's top Democrat, Senator Mark Warner of Virginia, confirmed the deal and says the panel will have access to the memos soon. He wouldn't say with whom the committee made the deal. A gas leak at a Kentucky university dorm caused a massive explosion yesterday afternoon that gutted the building and injured at least one person. Authorities say it appears that there was a natural gas leak at the Murray State University dorm. This witness says a large portion of the building was destroyed.
Grateful and thankful that, you know, this didn't happen 6 weeks later down the road when all the students got here.
One Murray State employee who was in the building at the time was injured. The latest social media craze: watermelon dresses complete with seeds. Young girls, women, and even some fashionable pets are rocking the trend, in which one person holds up a piece of the summer fruit while another poses behind it. The illusion is a watermelon dress, which you can now find all over the internet.
Uh-huh. Will we see you in one of these watermelon dresses?
If you hold it up.
If I get the watermelon and bring it in.
Yes.
We can arrange that.
Yes.
All right. Thank you, Jen. 22 minutes now after the hour. On This Morning, America's First News. Time now for a small business update, and it's brought to you by Dell. Need help finding the right Dell PCs with Intel Core processors for your business? Call 877-BUY-DELL to talk to a Dell small business tech advisor. Bad news on the job scene. There are at least four ways you're losing money when you show up at the office. It's a story from Kelly Grant, consumer reporter at CNBC.com. Kelly, what are they?
Well, one of the big ones that we look at here is always, you know, as you're assessing a new job or even if you're in a current job, you want to look at the value of all the benefits that you have available to you. A lot of cases, people end up losing money in the form of missed discounts for things like their cell phone plans or if they're paying for a gym membership, you know, little things like that. But that really could add up to a couple $100s or even thousands of dollars for something big, like if you were taking, say, an extra college course that your employer might have actually paid for.
Oh, wow. Okay. I know I tend to get emails about that type of stuff, but if you don't, it's worth asking, what, HR?
Yep, always worth looking at HR. If you've got a benefits site that's available to you, sort of your employee intranet, that can be a good opportunity there as well.
Very good. What's number two on the list?
Letting vacation time go unused. We know from numerous reports that come out this time of year, it's the average workers use about half of their eligible vacation time. And yes, ideally you should be taking that break, but if you feel like for whatever reason you just can't, you want to be looking at the different policies that are available to you. Some employers will let you roll that forward. Sometimes they'll pay that vacation time out. But if you're just letting those days expire at the end of the year, you know, those can be worth a couple $100s right there.
Well, I think there's still a fear, right, that we'll be gone for a week and we'll be forgotten. Somebody will step in and cover us and then we'll be replaced.
There is that fear. You know, I think for a lot of employees that is overblown, but, you know, it's up to you individually to look at that and see, you know, what is the real risk there for you taking that vacation time. You know, but there are plenty of studies out there, too, that point to, you know, a well-rested employee, like that's got some benefits there, and a vacation does a lot of good for you in terms of stress and helping you come back refreshed that you're maybe better able to tackle some of those tasks at work.
I think there was a time, right, where some companies are actually mandating that you take the time. If you don't go anywhere, just stay home.
And you can't underestimate the value of that staycation, too.
Yeah. We're speaking with Kelly Grant, consumer reporter at CNBC.com, talking about her story entitled Four Ways You're Losing Money at Work. All right, what's number three?
One of the big ones here is not reassessing your market value. This is something particularly if you are switching not just jobs but switching careers that we hear that a lot of times employees are not fully negotiating. They're not really looking at what skills transfer and what the benefit of their experience is. And that can be leaving, you know, over the course of it, easily tens of thousands of dollars on the table, because you've got to figure, you know, you're going to be missing out on that. And then every future pay increase is based on what you negotiate for.
I would not have guessed number four on the list, which is failing to secure your lunch. This is seriously a way we're losing money at work?
It is a goofy one, but there was a recent American Express survey that found that roughly one in five workers has eaten somebody else's lunch out of the office fridge. And if you are victimized, then you're losing out twice, because obviously you've spent money on groceries for you to make that lunch to bring it in, but then you have to replace it somehow, and usually that's going to mean takeout, and that can easily be twice the price of the cost of your brought-from-home lunch. And over time, you've got a regular lunch thief in the office. That's, you know, maybe a couple $100s over the course of a year that you're losing out.
A regular lunch thief at the office. Wow. Kelly Grant, consumer reporter at CNBC.com. So here are those four ways you're losing money when you show up at the office. Number one, leaving unused vacation time on the table. Number two, not reassessing your market value. Number three, missing out on secret jobs through networking. And, of course, number four, failing to secure your lunch. It's 30 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Small business never stops moving, so Dell's U.S.-based small business technology advisors are trained to keep up. Just call 877-BUY-DELL to get connected with an advisor who will get to know your business and tailor a solution with Dell PCs powered by Intel Core processors that is right for you, so you can focus on your business and leave the tech questions to Dell. Call 877-BUY-DELL to get in touch with a tech advisor today. You don't often find the words business and friendly in the same sentence, let alone the same state. Unless, of course, you're talking about Michigan. Michigan's business-friendly practices help them become a leader in industries that range from agriculture and cybersecurity to aerospace and defense. In fact, Michigan is ranked among the top 10 states for major new and expanded facilities. Which makes Michigan more than business-friendly, it makes Michigan business smart. To learn more, visit MichiganBusiness.org. Well, if you have to fill the family truckster for the July 4th holiday road trip, you're going to like what you see at the pump. How about this? For the first time in its 17-year history, Gas Buddy is projecting that gasoline prices will be lower on the 4th of July than they were on New Year's Day. Here's what's happening from Tom Kloza, global head of energy analysis at Oil Price Information Service based in New Jersey. Tom, what's going on?
Well, what's going on is crude oil is not behaving like most investment banks and traders and big money managers thought it would. Most of the predictions were for $55 to $60 crude in the second half of the year, or possibly even in the second quarter. And instead, we've been flirting with $42 or $43. So that's a big difference. And it's odd, but it looks as though June gasoline is going to average lower than it did in January. And New Year's Day prices will be higher than maybe we pay on July 4th. So it's kind of the bizarro world, as Jerry Seinfeld might say.
Obviously, we're tossing around that G word a lot, right? Glut. Is that part of the problem, or the big problem?
Well, there's definitely a glut for crude. There's no question about that. And that glut, I think, is going to persist. It might be a little bit less gelatinous at the end of the year than it's been for the first 5 or 6 months. But we're going to have too much crude for the foreseeable future. I never used the term glut for gasoline because we operate on a limited day supply, and we're capable because we have 2 million barrels a day more refining capacity than we did at the beginning of the century. But if something happens, a hurricane, a storm, you know, a refinery fire or whatever, we could be back in the soup where prices can go up very, very quickly, albeit for a brief period of time.
We're speaking with Tom Kloza, global head of energy analysis at Oil Price Information Service, and we're talking about the low prices of gasoline. So more broadly speaking, then, when it comes to oil, why the glut? Is this just about demand?
It's mostly about supply. OPEC did cut, but they cut by probably about as much as was increased in other non-OPEC countries. I call it the 7 and 7 problem, you know, like the drink. A lot of projects were commissioned 7 years ago when oil was $100 a barrel, and they're coming to fruition now in the next 18 months. Meanwhile, it takes about 7 months to ramp up and get some shale projects going.
So do you see prices staying in a certain range, given the factors that we know now?
Yeah, and I think that range will be probably from about $2 to about $2.40. It's odd because the first half of the year has produced a very, very narrow range, and I wouldn't be surprised to see both extremes, the low for the year and the high for the year, exceeded. I think if we get any kind of hurricane activity in the Gulf of Mexico, we'll see prices go up very, very quickly to yearly highs. But yearly highs are really, you know, 240 to 250. On the other hand, if we get through hurricane season and then we get to the last 100 days of the year, and there is this sort of seminal change in the way people behave and shop, I think we can see prices go get close to $2 or $2.10 a gallon, even if crude oil numbers eventually stabilize in the high 40s. So it's an odd situation, but it's cheap fuel for the most part, although if you hear about a hurricane, you better fill up.
Okay. you've probably already forgotten more about oil and gas than I'll ever know about it, but do you ever mess with like a gas station attendant?
You know, I live in New Jersey where we cannot pump our own gas. Mm-hmm. So I have very little interaction at the gas pumps. I'm not, you know, now when I go to Florida and I spend a few months there, I am allowed to do that. And I took great consolation in being able to pump my own gas down there.
You don't ask one of those Jersey guys, like, how long has the gas actually been in that tank underground? Can you give me an idea?
Yeah, I don't think there's too much awareness of exactly what's going on there or the formulation and how it differs from, you know, what it was 20 years ago. It's interesting because as we get to tougher corporate average fuel economy standards, we're going to have something interesting happen in the next 6 years. We'll have plenty of gasoline, but we won't have plenty of octane. And in order to meet those real tough regulations of 50, 54 miles per gallon that come in the middle of next decade, you may have to be driving around with octane between 97 and 99. And that's going to be the next challenge that people really face at the pump.
Thanks, Tom. Tom Kloza, Global Head of Energy Analysis at Oil Price Information Service in New Jersey. Well, San Francisco, once the hottest housing market in the U.S., is now one of the coolest, in a reversal that could be a sign of a broader slowdown if more buyers decide it ain't worth chasing rapidly rising prices. Wall Street Journal housing reporter Laura Casisto has been looking at the Bay Area and any parallels with the rest of the country. Laura, what's going on here?
So I think there are the two forces that are always at play with housing, supply and demand. And so on the supply side, at least in terms of the apartment market, we're seeing a huge flood of new supply in San Francisco, way more new construction than they've had in more than a decade. And so just inevitably, that tends to put downward pressure on rents. It's, of course, good news for renters and for potential home buyers because it eases some of the pressure, people maybe just say, you know what, I'll stay renting.
Yeah.
And then on the second side, I think, is probably the bigger factor, which is demand. So we're seeing a significant slowdown in the economy there, especially in terms of technology, seeing technology job growth go from about 15% to about, or like 2 years ago, to about 1% today. And those are the really high-wage jobs, the people that are buying the million-dollar condos and renting the $3,500 a month apartments. So it just makes sense that we'd see a drop-off in demand.
Wow. Any of this just the potential home buyer saying, my goodness, the home is just not worth that much. You can't justify the cost.
Yeah, I mean, I think you've got to believe that when home prices double in the course of less than a decade, people are going to look and say, especially if you're a first-time home buyer, you know, I just can't swing that, especially given how much rents have gone up and how hard it is to save for a down payment. And certainly one of the things we're hearing anecdotally it's about people just picking up and saying, you know what, I can telecommute, I can work from home, move to Portland, Dallas, Austin, one of these way cheaper cities that still has lots of cool stuff going on. And so I think that's also starting to weigh on demand a bit.
Wow. We're speaking with Wall Street Journal housing reporter Laura Casisto. She's written a piece called San Francisco's Housing Slowdown Could Spread. All right, so what about the spread of what's happening in San Francisco? Because I know it's kind of a unique market, as you point out, but what could we take away from this?
Yeah, so I think the possible overlap between San Francisco and the rest of the country comes with that factor we talked about with the affordability issue and people wearying of rising prices. We've seen home prices go up about twice as fast as incomes over the last several years. The concern is at a certain point, people just say, you know what, I just can't afford a home, or I'm really wary of buying when I've seen prices go up so much. And so that's, I think, what economists are watching really closely right now is, do we see a gradual slowdown? Do we see a drop-off in demand and maybe a flattening out of home price growth? Or do we potentially actually see declines in home prices or some kind of a crash? There's not a lot to worry about in terms of a crash right now, but it's definitely something to keep an eye on.
Thanks, Laura. Wall Street Journal housing reporter Laura Casisto. 8 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning. Jennifer Koschenka is back with more of America's First News.
Gordon, after months of winding through the courts, a revised version of President Trump's fiercely litigated travel ban will go into effect this evening. The test for foreign nationals under the Supreme Court's ruling is whether one has a credible claim of bona fide relationship with either an entity like a school or a job, or a person living in the U.S., such as a spouse. People who can't sufficiently establish such a close relationship are banned for 90 days if they are from Libya, Syria, Iran, Somalia, Yemen, and Sudan, and 120 days if they are a refugee from any country. Homeland Security is demanding that airlines around the world step up security measures for international flights bound for the U.S., or face the possibility of a total electronics ban. Homeland Secretary John Kelly says there are still big concerns about airplane threats.
Terrorists want to bring down aircraft to instill fear, disrupt our economies, and undermine our way of life. And it works, which is why they still see aviation as the crown jewel target in their world.
Compliance with the new rules could lead to the lifting of a ban on laptops and other large electronics already in place for airlines flying to the U.S. from 10 airports in the Middle East and Africa. Australian police have charged a top Vatican cardinal with multiple counts of historical sexual assault offenses. Cardinal George Pell, Pope Francis's chief financial advisor and Australia's most senior Catholic, will return to Australia to fight the charges. Vatican spokesman Greg Burke.
The Holy Father, having been informed by Cardinal Pell, has granted the cardinal a leave of absence so he can defend himself.
Pell has denied the accusations and denounced what he called the media's relentless character assassination. The July 4th holiday brings lots of fun stuff like fireworks, parades, and barbecues, but it also brings headaches like traffic. And traffic app Waze advises that you don't attempt a car trip between 2 and 5 p.m. tomorrow, which will be the worst window of travel. If you can, travel on Monday, July 3rd. Waze predicts decreases in traffic jams of as much as 92% on that day.
Wouldn't Waze want you to drive during peak drive time so they could show off, like, the alternate routes they can find for you and stuff like that?
Perhaps.
How about that?
Perhaps.
That's good advice. 6 minutes now in front of the hour. How about this? A man in England carefully scanned through all 10 seasons of Friends to determine how much coffee each of the characters drank. UPI says a guy named Kit Lovelace shared a series of graphs on Twitter chronicling how much coffee each character drank during all 236 episodes. His results show that Phoebe drank the most coffee, 227 cups, while Rachel drank the least, about 138. He says in total, more than 1,100 cups were poured, purchased, or consumed. Using information gathered from two different scenes, Mr. Lovelace also managed to calculate how much money each character spent on coffee, including tips. He puts it at $1.46 per character per episode. And adding info from a scene where Chandler mentions leaving a 20% tip, Mr. Lovelace calculated the group spent a total of $2,077 on coffee throughout the series. Oh, by the way, he told the Huffington Post he's not a huge diehard fan of the series. I might beg to differ. For Jennifer Koschenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Morning, America's First News.